Good afternoon, and welcome to the Research Frontiers November 3rd, 2016 third quarter investor conference call. All participants will be in listen-only mode. Should you need assistance, please signal a conference specialist by pressing the star key followed by zero. After today's presentation, there will be an opportunity to ask questions. To ask a question, you may press star then one on your telephone keypad. To withdraw your question, please press star then two. Please note this event is being recorded. I would now like to turn the conference over to Seth Van Voorhees, Chief Financial Officer of Research Frontiers. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, everyone. Please note that some of the comments made today may contain forward-looking information. The words expect, anticipate, plans, forecast, and similar expressions are intended to identify forward-looking statements. Statements that are not historical facts are forward-looking statements that are made pursuant to the safe harbor provisions that are part of the Security Litigation Reform Act of 1995. These statements reflect the company's current beliefs, and a number of important factors could cause actual results for future periods to differ materially from those expressed. Significant factors that could cause the results to differ from those anticipated are described in our filings with the SEC. Research Frontiers undertakes no obligation to update or revise these forward-looking statements to reflect new events or uncertainties. The company will be answering many of the questions that are emailed to prior to this conference call, either in their presentation or part of the Q&A session at the end. In some cases, the company has responded directly to email questions prior to the call, or will do so afterwards in order to answer more questions of general interest to shareholders on this call. If you find that your question has been substantially answered, as a courtesy and to allow for other shareholders to ask their questions, please remove yourself from the queue by pressing star 2. Also, we ask that you keep your questions brief in the interest of time. I'd like now to turn the conference over to Joseph Harary, President and Chief Executive Officer of Research Frontiers. Joe?
Thanks, Seth. And many of you know Seth as our Chief Financial Officer, who also heads up our VeriGuard division. I'm going to spend some time today going into what is underneath the numbers that we just reported so that you could have a better idea of the trends and future results. We received a number of questions from investors, and I will address as many as I can today. I will try to be concise, and if I have not fully answered any questions either in my presentation today or in the live Q&A later on, please feel free to email me. So moving right to the numbers. Because of the nature of our business as a licensing company, there are various fees and other payments that we receive from time to time that are non-recurring. As we discussed on the last conference call, there were a lot of fees and other income items like the World's Fair that occurred in 2015 that by their nature did not recur in 2016. When we back these non-recurring items out, we can focus on the trends and results of operations better for 2016 and make some predictions about the future. Let's talk about automotive. The automotive market is currently our largest market. In our last conference call, we went into quite a lot of detail about the results for the second quarter, including the fact that this represents the fourth quarter of the model year at Mercedes, when typically sales volumes are down as they reduce production to make room for new vehicles at dealer showrooms. We also discussed other factors that made the second quarter total sales volume for Mercedes in total lower than usually would be expected. Obviously, when discussing fee income for the full 9 months of this year, the lower sales results from the second quarter will have an impact on this. But as you will see when we discuss sales levels during the last two quarters, our business has rebounded, and it is expected to rebound even further. We said in our prior conference call that we expected the third and fourth quarter to be higher. Our prediction was accurate. The most important thing to note here is that royalties from both of our main automotive licensees, Asahi and Pilkington, were up in the third quarter as compared to the second quarter. In one case, by more than double the second quarter. Looking forward, we have a solid and straightforward strategy in automotive. First, it is a market with very little, if any, competition for SPD. No smart glass technology can approach our combination of durability and performance. It took Daimler millions of euros to develop and validate this product for their Magic Sky Control panoramic roof. Any new technology will have to offer both high performance and the ability to meet highly stringent automotive durability standards. we are not aware of any other switchable technology that will be able to meet our high levels of performance and also meet the demanding requirements of OEMs such as Daimler in this market. We have a highly reliable product. There still has not been one reported failure of the SPD Magic Sky Control roofs in the tens of thousands of cars that have been on the road for years using our technology. The automotive press and customers continue to love the product. The dealers also love it because it is a source of profit and customer satisfaction. And our dealer awareness program is being well received, and we have now expanded this to other regions. We have spoken already about expected growing revenues from increasing take rates and more cars being produced during the second half of this year. What about other OEMs, which is a question that Seth and I get quite often. As I've noted in the past, we and our licensees have been working with the world's premium auto manufacturers. Several of them that have already developed and tested their own SPD Smart Glass products for their upcoming cars have told us that they are looking to see what the take rates for the Mercedes S-Class sedan will be. If these take rates are high and the option is popular, these other OEMs will pull the trigger and put SPD on their own vehicles. As I noted in our prior conference call, we are indeed seeing these higher take rates. We told shareholders at our annual stockholders meeting this past June to expect other OEMs to adopt SPD. We reiterated this in more detail on our last conference call in early August. Today, I can give you one more significant detail about this new car. I can tell you that while we may not know exactly when this OEM will announce this vehicle, because that's up to their marketing department, I can tell you that we now know the start of production month for this vehicle. And there are other vehicles, too, besides this. I was asked in one of the questions emailed to me for this conference call about SPD being used on lower price but substantially higher volume vehicles, such as the Mercedes E-Class. I outlined part of our strategy above, and it is bearing good results. But to penetrate even further into high volume cars, it should be no surprise that the typical cost-volume relationship applies, especially when a new technology like ours becomes a little more mature. We have a focused effort with RFI working with all areas of our licensee supply chain and their customers to target cost reductions in the final selling price of products using our technology with correspondingly higher sales volumes. These efforts will probably be the most important things that we can do going forward to further penetrate into high-volume automotive sales. Everyone in the supply chain understands this, and we are all working together to achieve this as quickly as possible to further bolster our successes in the automotive market. Now let's talk about the aircraft market. That's our second largest revenue market. In aircraft, we have four very active licensees. Revenue from one of these licensees was temporarily down in the second and third quarters because of a design improvement that was requested by one OEM customer for several different aircraft models. So new window installations were down while this improvement could be implemented. As mentioned in the last conference call, this was temporary and improvements have been implemented, and revenue from this licensee is expected to be back up again in the fourth quarter. This year, there were some very important developments in the aircraft market. The OEM market has always been an attractive market, both in general aviation and in the much larger transport category airliner market. As we know from our experience with the Textron King Air, because of the long periods that aircraft remain in service, interior upgrades in the aftermarket can make the aftermarket over 20 times larger a market than the OEM market. With recent developments, now all of our aircraft licensees offer aftermarket as well as OEM products. In February, our aircraft licensee Vision Systems partnered with New York Stock Exchange giant AAR Corporation for the aftermarket. Also in the aftermarket upgrade market, Fokker Services, a subsidiary of our licensee GKN Aerospace, introduced their Skyview large panoramic window at the Hamburg Air Show in April. More significantly, About 2 weeks ago, Fokker introduced a window targeted for the very large commercial airliner market. In their press release, Fokker indicated first delivery of this product in Q3 2017, which is less than a year away. Fokker has partnered with our licensee in SpecDeck on this to achieve the speed to market. Not only is this for single aisle and the larger dual aisle airliner market, which is the largest market in aviation, but this is also an aftermarket product, which, as we noted, is a significantly larger market than just the OEM market. The new Fokker Element EDW window comes in a kit with an installation guide to make it easier for customers to incorporate this into their aircraft with a minimum of downtime during scheduled maintenance checks. You know, one hallmark of our technology is there does not need to be a replacement of the outer structural window of the aircraft in order to make an SPD electronically dimmable window. So the aftermarket is a market that we have a particularly good competitive advantage over electrochromic windows, which does require the change of the structural window. And one last thing to note of significance. In September, our licensee Vision Systems announced the formation of the Smart Light Division of Vision Systems. It has top management attention and focus and consists of a dedicated team of 40 people and an equal number of support staff. This represents the largest dedicated team devoted to SPD smart glass technology in the world. Vision Systems has had a number of successes in all SPD markets that they're in. Aircraft, trains, mass transit, yachts and cruise ships, and I met with them yesterday, and I'm pleased to tell you that they are adding another major market to this list besides the ones I just mentioned. Let's talk about some of the other markets. We focus mostly on our top two markets today, automotive and aerospace. There's also been notable activity in our other markets as well. The success of the World's Fair project has helped tremendously in the architectural market for our technology. Smart Glass International recently published a case study about their University of Edinburgh retrofit project using SPD to protect interiors and save energy. Another licensee recently was awarded an upcoming retrofit project for another company's corporate headquarters. Even though the size of this project is significant, I think it is also significant that other smart glass technologies bid on this project and they were not selected. New opportunities are constantly now presenting themselves. Tomorrow I'm traveling to visit another one of these projects in the architectural market where we have some unique advantages. You also saw another growing market for our technology, trains and transit. At the September InnoTrans show in Berlin, there was quite a strong presence of SPD smart glass technology in significant use at various locations throughout the show. Significant other new projects besides what was shown at InnoTrans using our SPD smart glass technology are also in the works in the train and transit market. And we continue to build awareness in all industries. This year, I was the keynote speaker at two automotive glass conferences that were well attended by licensees, prospective licensees, and OEMs. We've also been focusing on the specific benefits that SPD smart technology offers in the growing electric vehicle market. And about a week ago, I presented the benefits of SPD technology at the Autonomous Vehicle Conference in Detroit. After my presentation, a number of people, including OEMs, lined up for about an hour to talk to me. These conference venues have shown to be an effective way to meet the right people to introduce them to our technology and for educating the customer about the benefits of SPD Smart Glass and how it compares in terms of performance and durability to other switchable glass technologies. This also will, of course, benefit our business development efforts in these areas. Moving to our balance sheet, it remains strong and debt-free, and as of September 30th, we had working capital of about $5.5 million. Based upon existing cash and levels of expenditures, even if our revenues stayed the same and did not increase as we're expecting, our cash would be sufficient to fund our operations until at least early 2018. We were asked about the status of our patent litigation, in which we're suing E, Inc., Amazon, Sony, and Barnes & Noble for infringement of three of our patents. Nothing new to report here. A Markman hearing was held last November, and the purpose of this hearing is to interpret what the words in our patents mean. We're still waiting for the judge's decision. One last thing. I don't usually comment on our stock price, but there were a number of questions emailed to us about this, and I thought it would be productive to touch on this briefly. Why is our stock down? People get spooked when they see a low stock price. They think of all sorts of reasons, and they try to understand why. That's human nature and perfectly understandable, especially with individual investors. And in our case, I think it's important to understand that our stock price decline is not because of any fundamental reason regarding our business. Between quarterly earnings releases, the SEC requires all public companies to disclose any material change in their business, both positive and negative. And if you don't see any SEC filing disclosing any negative information, and we've had none, then the answer simply must be one related to the supply and demand for our stock, which can move the stock price up or down. Let's talk about supply. Short selling increases the supply of stock, and I know that there was a fairly recent and notable increase in the short interest of our stock. This means that there was an artificially increased supply of stock, which tends to result in a reduction in stock price. Also during this quarter, I had asked the financial regulators to look into why the short interest in our stock during one particular period went down by more than the total trading volume of our stock during the entire period. They're investigating this. If we were doing a financing and selling stock, this would also increase the supply of stock. However, since we're not in discussions with anyone about a financing and have not been for many years, I think I can rule this out as a reason. Another source of supply is if someone is selling a large position. We have not heard of anyone doing this. Or we could be seeing end-of-the-year tax loss selling. If this was the case, when it subsides, this should result in an end to the downward pressure on our stock. It can also be caused by cyclical movement of money away from small-cap stocks. Many investors in small-cap stocks have seen their portfolio values decline this year. With good prospects ahead of us, I think we will rise to the top of this area of the market, especially as we show revenue growth. So you can pick whatever reason you think is valid for an oversupply of stock causing our stock price to decline. And I certainly don't like it when there are, quote, buying opportunities in our stock. But when they exist, people have also been using them as opportunities to increase their position. So on the demand side, we've seen some of our larger shareholders increase their positions. And to answer another shareholder's question that we received by email, insiders have not been able to take advantage of these buying opportunities, however, because the window is currently closed and we're all restricted from stock transactions. So since there have not been any fundamental reason for our stock price decline, now that I've answered the questions we've received about this, I'll ask the operator, Amy, to please open up the conference to any additional questions people may have that are participating in today's conference that we haven't already covered.
Thank you. To ask a question, you may press star, then one on your telephone keypad. If you're using a speakerphone, please pick up your handset before pressing the keys. To withdraw your question, please press star, then two. Once again, that's star, then one to ask a question, and we'll pause momentarily to assemble our roster. First question is from Ishfaq Farooq at Westpark Capital.
Hi, good afternoon, Joe and Seth.
Hi, Ishfaq, how are you?
Good. Okay, just a couple of quick questions. You guys mentioned in the earnings release that you have some OEMs in the pipeline. Is that like a new OEM in addition to Mercedes, or is that like a single model of a car?
Oh, no,
you get some color?
OEM. That's a new OEM in addition to Mercedes.
And based on your discussions, is that are they talking to you with regards to just one car model or like multiple models at this point?
Well, the initial development was for one car model, but the plan is for them to expand it to other car models. I mean, once, you know, and we saw this from Mercedes, once you understand the design benefits of using SPD Smart Glass, it tends to propagate within an OEM. So that's, you know, that's the other discussions we've been having.
And, like, is this like a major OEM? I think you're not allowed to probably disclose this at this point. So, like, could you give some sense on, like, how big the OEM is or something along those lines?
It's a fairly substantial and well-known OEM that has a long-standing history of producing fine luxury cars. So it'll be a name people recognize. It won't be a newcomer. It'll be a name people recognize.
Okay. 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 Could you give some additional color on the aircraft market? You mentioned in your release that you're expecting a recovery from the aircraft market in Q4.
Right. Basically, we have several, you know, very active licensees in this area. In one case, the OEM had requested some design modifications to improve the aircraft. And until those design modifications could be implemented, you know, basically there was a lull in the revenues from that OEM for the different models that they're on. I'm happy to say that, you know, the design improvements, you know, have been implemented already, and production has already started, and deliveries of, you know, aircraft with those new custom with those new improvements have started. So, you know, we're going to start to see, and we've already started to see an uptick again.
Okay. Could you disclose, like, what percentage of your revenues came from automotive this quarter? I know you just released the 10Q, but if you could give us some color on that.
Yeah, without getting into a lot of specifics, it's typically between 70% is coming from automotive, and typically between 15% and 20% is coming from aircraft.
And that was this quarter as well?
Yes.
All right. All right. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks a lot.
The next question is from Jared Albert, a private investor.
Hi, Joe. Hi, Seth.
Hey, Jared.
Hey, Jared.
Hi. So I imagine most of us thought that the S sedans would contribute a lot more to revenues than either they are or given that it was new for the 2017 model on the dealer ordering guide, and the production started to hit lots at the very end of September. Can you give some explanation of why these sedans didn't bump up the revenues?
Well, in the third quarter, they did bump up the revenues. Remember, we had a slowdown in some markets and an increase in the others. But early in the conference call, I mentioned that both of our automotive licensees had higher revenues in the third quarter, and in one case it was more than double the prior quarter. So, you know, we're starting to see that rebound. These things typically work their way into the system. I think part of it that's helping is our dealer awareness program, and, you know, the customer continues to love the product. So, you know, I expect very good things from that.
You floated the notion in the past that the S sedan alone could make us profitable, and if you were to take a, you know, a 30% take rate on let's say 80,000 units at $200 a unit, you'd come up with a number that would at least get to break even.
That's
we
right.
We didn't see that this quarter though.
Not
so
yet.
What I'm asking is, was there a full quarter of production of these S classes? Was there builds that were early in the quarter that didn't involve Magic Sky? I mean, is there a reason that the revenues were essentially, you know, flat, almost down even from other quarters,
we're going off of a second quarter, you know, situation where there was a lot of disruption, not only with Magic Sky Control but with cars in general, which we talked about on the last conference call. But, you know, we have high hopes, Jared, that that some of the things that we're discussing with Daimler will, you know, continue to increase the take rates, and that the S-Class could contribute to alone to being us for us being profitable.
Are you seeing reasonable take rates for the S-Class?
I think anything less than 100% is not a reasonable take rate, but I'm a little bit biased in that, and I have high expectations, just like our shareholders. So,
given the refresh of the SLC and the SL for the 2017 model year, wouldn't a reasonable person have expected higher revenues from those models? Have the royalty rates dropped enormously?
We did get higher revenues from those models because of the refresh. The refresh from the S-Class doesn't start until at least a year from now. So we're kind of in that that place where the volumes typically will bump up, usually by about 50% from where they were, you know, at this level of the production cycle for the S-Class.
You know, when the SLK, back when it was started in the SL, the revenue guidance was, I think, 100 to 150 a unit.
Right.
At the beginning, was it closer to 150 or were we closer to 100? Now, what I'm trying to do is I'm trying to understand why the revenues were, you know, legitimately low. I mean, if you look back at 12 or 13, we were getting more revenue from automotive. I know the take rates have gone up. The production numbers may have gone down. But I'm wondering if the royalty rates, if we're now at the low end of those ranges, for example, that 150 to 250 on the S-Classes.
There has been some cost reductions on some of the cars, but not to that level where you would see a big swing in the range. The reason we had to give a range, Jared, is that we can't disclose exactly what Mercedes is paying for the glass. They wouldn't like that, or me that much, if I did that.
I understand that. But if you exclude everything but automotive for the fourth quarter, so in the fourth quarter we'll have a full quarter of production of these S-Classes, these 2017s that are all from Magic Sky. Should we expect a very big bump in revenue, or is this kind of the baseline for the S-Class?
You know, let's just see how the fourth quarter turns out. I don't want to predict anything because, you know, literally we just got the third quarter numbers about a week ago.
Was this a full quarter of Magic Sky inclusion on those S sedans? That's my fundamental question because it was.
Well, the answer to that question is yes, but it also depends on what the order book shows and what the and what Mercedes is trying to achieve. It's not necessarily pushing out the door every option. You know, there's different types of different times in the year when certain options probably get pushed out, and that's really a marketing decision.
You didn't say this quarter whether take rates were as high as they've ever been. Was that true for the third quarter? You said that for the second quarter.
We had a peak at the take rates in the beginning of August. We haven't gotten another peak at the take rates more recently. But just judging from the numbers are up. So, I'm optimistic. But I can't say for certainty what the take rate is because we didn't get a peak at the order system more recently.
Are you disappointed by the revenues from the S sedans this third quarter?
I expected it to rebound. It did rebound. So in one extent, it's exactly what we predicted. Going back to my prior comment, I'm always going to be disappointed with revenues until this is standard equipment on every car, like aluminum wheels or nav systems. We're not resting.
But to get to standard, we have to get down that experience curve, and these very low, revenue numbers indicate sort of very low film production. So I've been kind of following this along, waiting for those S sedans, and I expected much higher revenue numbers.
Jared, in the interest of allowing other people to ask a question, we could continue this discussion offline. But just to maybe give you a little bit more guidance as to what we're thinking here, I'm going to refer you back to a comment I made earlier, which is in order to get into higher volume automotive, it's imperative that costs come down. And just think about a typical automotive manufacturer, not necessarily just Mercedes, but anybody out there. So if you make the assumption that 20% of your options, 20% of your MSRP is going to go to options, what you're going to do is you're going to have a economic incentive because pretty much every automaker makes their money on the options, to push the options that have the highest multiple of what you're paying. Now, there's some options out there like aluminum wheels, for example, alloy wheels, where, the multiple is much, much higher than nav systems or high-end stereos or Magic Sky Control. As you can imagine, If you're an OEM, you're going to push aluminum wheels on people because you're making a much bigger profit per dollar on that. And when you, you know, if you make the assumption that there's a kind of a rule of thumb in terms of what those options are, you know, you're going to push the ones that have the highest multiples to increase your total profit on options. Now, there's a limit to what you could do. I mean, you know, you can be making, you know, for example, BMW introduced on their 7 Series a roof, and the only thing that was really added to that was some LED lighting that was put in the frame. And they charged a lot for that. And I can guarantee you, based on my discussions with some of the automakers, those LEDs didn't cost a lot of money. So on that option, they're making an extraordinarily high multiple of what it cost them. So going back to what I had said earlier, we have a cost reduction initiative going on with the key suppliers, and that's something that is very important to get into the mid-market within the automotive industry, but it's also going to help on the premium market. So, you know, think about what that means strategically, and I think you'll see some pretty clear paths ahead of us.
Okay. I appreciate that. Thank
sure.
you.
The next
listen
question.
To the replay also. I think you'll get some interesting insights.
Okay.
The next question is from Jeff Harvey, private investor.
Hi, Joe.
Hey, Jeff. How are you?
Just to follow up on that a little bit. So you said you're in some cost initiatives with your suppliers. Is it up to your suppliers, or is that something you can help them do as far as reducing costs? Are you working on that as well?
Well, of course, we're always looking to make SPD more robust and more cost-effective and easier to implement. And, you know, our technical team here does that all the time. They focus on that. So that's one aspect of it. But also, it's a matter of, you know, we sit in somewhat of a unique position, Jeff. In some cases, we have limited information. In some cases, we have more information than any one of our licensees, because it's not that we're smarter, it's just that we talk to everyone, we're getting reports from everyone. We have 43 licensees out there, and we're also talking to the customers. So by virtue of who we are in kind of the SPD industry, we get a lot of information. And that allows us to do some things to help people deploy their resources more effectively. But like I said, it's not that we're smarter, we're just looking at things from the mountaintop with a better viewpoint. And that's one area where we're adding value. And the other is in business development. I mean, you know, we have focused a lot of our time and resources, and that goes for Seth, for me, for Mike LaPointe, in, which is our, you know, key business development team here, in making sure all the markets are doing well. And by virtue of that, we talk to everybody, and we know where the sweet spots are, and we help our licensees identify that. So, yeah, it's kind of an overall effort. I mean, I can't sit there and do much to reduce the electricity cost at the Asahi plant or something like that, but I could help them focus on other areas where they can achieve cost savings.
Do you have a feel for how much reduction in cost sort of needs to happen before some of these automotive companies may want to put it on more models and cheaper models?
Absolutely. We have targets, and I'm happy to say that they're feasible and achievable.
Okay, that's good to hear. My other question is, and I don't know if you can have some kind of color on this, is so as you said all along that these other OEMs in the automotive area anyways are waiting to see what the take rate is from Mercedes. I mean, what kind of, do you have any feel for what kind of time frame that is with an automotive company? Is it a six-month period? Is it a year they're going to look at this?
Well, it's going to be a combination of two things. Number one is, you know, how much data do they need to be comfortable? And the other is, you know, they've all have cars that are slated for introduction with SPD. So a lot of it's going to depend on the life cycle of that car. You know, when does that car come online? I mean, if it was just refreshed and they don't have enough data, they're going to wait 3 years. If it's going to be refreshed in a year, maybe they, you know, say we have enough data now to make a decision. And, of course, Success
so,
begets
Do they need
success.
A year lead time to put it in a car? Is that what you're saying?
I'm not saying what the lead time is. I mean, there's some car makers, and the one that we mentioned earlier, I think I had said earlier in the last conference call, they're willing to take some shortcuts. They're willing to use the same suppliers as Mercedes and accept the same testing as Mercedes to accelerate the process. But that's because their car is being introduced at a time when they want to have this on it, and they're pushing for it. If somebody had the luxury of time because the car is not getting redesigned for 4 years, they could do a full test protocol. They may not have to take the same shortcuts. But, Mercedes tested the hell out of this. I mean,
So I guess my other question would be, why wouldn't other auto companies do the same thing, go along with Mercedes testing?
Well, if they have a car that's near term and they feel comfortable enough with the data out there, and, there's other things. I mean, if you look at, for example, what's happened with the S-Class in the United States. Tesla had sold a lot more cars than historical, and that ate into the sales of BMW and Mercedes. In the high-end luxury market, there's going to be all these different kind of spokes to the wheel that are affecting things. In other words, I guess the simple answer is, every automaker is going to be different. Some have already pulled the trigger, as I mentioned earlier, and that may cause others to pull the trigger sooner.
Is Tesla somebody that you've talked to?
One of the things I mentioned earlier was that we are presenting at a lot of the conferences, and one of the main messages that we're presenting about SPD is that it increases driving range by 5.5% on electric vehicles.
So that they should be interested.
Yeah. So we're talking to the right people, and our licensees are doing the same. Electric vehicles is not as far off as being mainstream as, let's say, autonomously driven vehicles. But
no,
there's significant competition emerging in that market among all the mainstream players, plus some new players besides Tesla that are out there. And we and our licensees are talking to everybody.
Yeah, great. Thanks very much.
Thanks, Jeff.
The next question comes from Chuck Michaels, private investor.
Hi, Joseph. How are you doing?
Hey, how you doing, Chuck?
Good. Hey, I got a few questions. Some were already asked, and I'm not going to repeat those. I did have some questions. One is as to the commercial aircraft market. Commercial aviation.
Yeah.
How are you doing in terms of trying to get into that market? I know you've done, gotten into general aviation, but
That's a great question, Chuck. And just to put the question in context, the vast majority of aircraft deliveries are in the transport category market. And when we talk about number of windows, it's at least 2/3 of the revenue for the whole market. So it's definitely a sweet target to go after. One of the things we have going for us in terms of help there is that SPD technology is the longest flying technology in any market, including commercial. And, we've been on the A380 since Qantas started taking delivery of those. But I think the most significant thing that's happened in the near term is two things, really. Vision Systems has a dedicated smart light division, and one of their strategies, and I'm not revealing anything that should be a surprise to anyone, is specifically targeting the airlines, because it's the airlines that tell the customer, the OEMs, what to put on the planes. The other thing that I think is highly significant and very recent and very exciting is Fokker Services. They're a subsidiary of the largest structural window manufacturer in the world, GKN Aerospace. They have come up with a kit that the airlines can actually use to quickly upgrade their windows to become SPD smart. And according to their press release, so this is their projections that I can talk about, not my own, they're talking about introduction in the third quarter of 2017. So, you're talking about a fairly aggressive near-term penetration into the biggest market for aircraft, and it's something that I'm very excited about. And I've seen their product. I've seen the approach they're taking, which is very modular. They want to, you know, they want to have a cassette that you pop in that makes it easy to make your Windows SPD smart. And I think just the ease of use and the fact that there's a standardized kit is going to be extremely helpful. You know, in some markets, I wish we could do the same, like architectural, where one of the questions we got is, why aren't we in, you know, the big box stores? And, you know, there you need standard sizes, and most custom windows for the architectural market are not standard sizes. So it's a little more difficult, a little bit more difficult to do it in that market. But, you know, in things like automotive and aircraft, where we're really, really strong, there's also a push towards standardization and economies of scale, and that's been very helpful. But thanks for asking that question, because the commercial airline market is certainly a very juicy market for us.
Right. Also, as to your cash available, maybe I misread it, but from what I saw on the financials, it looked like you had just over like about $2.5 million in cash.
The reason it looks like that, but it's actually we had $5.5 million in working capital, is the way we account for things is between cash and cash equivalents. So if you have a longer-term CD, it's not technically cash.
Okay.
So it's considered a short-term investment.
Yeah. Okay, so that's how you get to
having enough
funds until 2018 minimum. Yeah.
Right, exactly.
Yeah, monies that we have in six-month CD bank CDs are treated as short-term investments, and that equates to about $1.5 million on our balance sheet. And money that we have in like checking accounts and things like that are treated as cash or cash equivalents, and that equates to about $3 million.
In essence, they're the same functional equivalents, though, but the accounts make us break it up to two.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Thank you. That helps. Also, and then finally, I wanted to ask as to what your plan is as far as getting to profitability, because I, you know, it seems like that's always the nut we're never quite getting there.
There's a couple of, I think, good takeaways from today's call, and when people listen to the replay, you'll probably kind of see this pattern developing. Number one is just, you know, purely just continuing to, you know, to push in every one of our markets. And we have licensees now that are pushing much harder than ever before because they're devoting much more resources to this, like Vision Systems, for example. And then, of course, you have the cost-volume relationship that is also going to increase volumes. And then you have just synergies by developing critical mass. You know, you have one OEM. They put it in one model, then another, then another, then another, then another. Each one of those models becomes accretive to revenue. Then you have a second OEM, and that happens, and that becomes accretive to revenue. And in the meantime, the take rates go up, and, you know, each model becomes a more significant contributor to revenue and to profit. And before you know it, you're cash flow positive, and then you're profitable. And each time you have a success, it creates another success.
So are you confident, then, that you're going to be able to get with you know, mass production, that you'll be able to get the cost down, you know, so you'll, in other words, are you going to be able to get enough windows out there so you can get the cost down to become a mass production?
Yeah. As I mentioned, you know, we have a cost reduction initiative in place with key areas of our supply chain, and the targets that we need to achieve are feasible and, you know, can be near-term targets. One of the things that we have that our competitors in other markets like the architectural market don't have is that we have the ability to have relatively high volumes and standard sizes in things like the automotive market and the aircraft market. So, you know, we have markets that, you know, are really sweet markets that our competitors in other markets wish they had, and that also helps too. So, you know, it's, you know, there's no magic to this. It's really just having a very simple approach, which is, you know, Seth, Mike, and I are on planes more often than we're here probably. We're visiting the customers. We're building awareness, and we're talking about specific programs and generating business. So that's, you know, and this business, some of it shows up right away. I mean, in the architectural market, you'll see things kind of pop into place. In the automotive and aircraft market, it's somewhat more up to the customer, the OEM, to decide when they're going to talk about something. But it doesn't mean that the activity hasn't been going on and they're ready to pull the, you know, or they've pulled the trigger and it's just a matter of when did the marketing guys get involved. So, yeah, it's a pretty straightforward approach. And in all five markets, you know, we're doing the right things to continue that approach.
Okay. Thank you, guys.
Thanks.
The next question is from Thomas McCarthy, Raymond James.
Hi there, gentlemen. Two questions. Good. Two questions, if there's enough time. One is, what can you tell us now about the amount of likely business from Viking cruise ships, and what kind of timeline are we talking about? And then related to that is there anything in the works with other cruise ship companies?
Well, without talking about any specific customer, the amount of business in the cruise market is potentially huge because, to some extent, these are floating architectural projects. You know, and whether they choose to deploy this on their premium stateroom or in every cabin on the ship is going to depend on, you know, that's going to be kind of where the revenues swing. And to answer the second question, we're not just talking, or our licensees are not just talking to one, but, you know, you validate a product in one with one manufacturer or with one customer, and it's a lot of the a lot of legwork has already been done for customers 2, 3, and 4. So, yeah, we definitely see that as a nice market, and as I mentioned in the last call, I was really pleased to see that, you know, that's beginning to develop.
Okay. The second question is, bring us up to date on status and plans for these demos of SPD technology that would be in Mercedes-Benz showrooms.
Okay. So we, in coordination with MB USA, Mercedes-Benz USA in Atlanta, have a constant dialogue going back and forth about the most effective ways of deploying these demo units and who the right dealers are and who the right people in the dealers are and where the business is. So we've been getting very good cooperation from MB USA. And, you know, they have an approach that they've suggested to us as to how to best deploy this, and we've been following that approach. So we started in the southern market. And just to refresh everyone's memory or people that may be new to the company, there are four main regions where the U.S. is divided into: the South, the Northeast, the Northwest, and the Southwest. And not necessarily what you would think of geographically, because the Northeast actually goes all the way over to Colorado, I believe, geographically, but it's more kind of a business regions. And we started in the South. That was the area where there was a particular concern that the panoramic roofs on the S-Class, which are standard, might be bringing in too much heat. And customers needed something that would be a very effective heat control item. Well, remember, we reduced cabin temperature by 18 degrees, which is very significant. You know, if we were standard equipment, that was significant enough to be reducing your air conditioning compressors by 40%. But as an option, what it does also is it's something that the customers in the southern region can certainly rally around as a benefit. So we started there, got good feedback. Now we started to move into the Northeast, where, you know, which was the second region that our customer, you know, that MB USA suggested doing. At the same time, if you look at worldwide, so we're not just focusing on the U.S., but we're focusing on the key markets for the S-Class in particular. You know, you have China as the largest market. You have the Middle East and Russia, and the United States is the other major market. So in each market, it's a little bit of a different approach, but basically the same concept. There's usually a couple of decision makers that are approachable. So, for example, there's mega dealers in China. There's a distributor in China that also is highly influential. In Russia, it's probably similar. There's distributors and maybe not so many mega dealers, but more distributors that are controlling that market. In Russia, the same thing. So those are the kind of approaches we take to kind of duplicate this. And these are, you know, as we've expressed in the past, handheld desktop models that we developed in conjunction with feedback from the dealers as to what they would want to see. They've been very well received, and judging from the higher take rates we were seeing, they're being an effective sales tool.
Do the dealers and distributors help pay for the cost?
No. What we've done is we basically are going in there and giving them a nice little sales tool as a present, because quite frankly, you sell one more car and you've probably paid for the entire demonstrator.
Sure.
So it makes sense. And, you know, it's money well spent because you look at the four regions, you look at who's selling most of the S-classes, there's not that many dealers. You know, 10 or 15 dealers in each region probably is all you're talking about that are the top sellers. So even if you went down to 20 dealers in each region, there's four regions, that's 80 in the United States. It's certainly a doable thing.
How many of these demos are being used now in the United States?
I'd rather not disclose that because there's some dealers that haven't gotten theirs yet, and we don't want anyone to feel left out of the process. So it's being deployed in a sensible and kind of methodical way.
Do you expect to cover most dealers?
Yeah, well, most of the key dealers for the S-Class. And like I said, we've been getting very good cooperation from MBUSA as to who we should be focusing on and, you know, where the sweet spots are. And, you know, they realize that, you know, we need to deploy our marketing dollars effectively also.
Very good. Thank you, Joe.
Thanks a lot.
The next question is from Steve Almacher, retired.
Hello.
Hi, please
go
ahead.
Yeah, hi, Joe. How are you?
Good. How are you?
Not too bad. I'd like to thank you personally for the remark you made earlier today about asking regulators to look into the stock price.
We're trying to keep this as honest a playing field as we can, and unfortunately, it's not. But, you know, we're doing our best while still not taking our eye off the main ball, which is our business. So referring it over to the regulators and letting them, you know, do their magic, you know, is, I think, the best use of our time, and then we can focus, you know, on the business development side.
Okay, now by regulators, is this the SEC?
FINRA is really the overarching regulator for the, you know, that would be relevant here.
Okay, because I made a purchase today, and I think the digits on it stretched out for 5 or 6 fractional of a cent.
Really? That stuff's going on also now?
Oh, yeah, it's been going on for a while, but, you know, last week one day, or 2 weeks ago, I watched a purchase of like 2 or 3 shares go through and actually fluctuate the price a couple cents, and I'm thinking, I deal with Scottrade, who is probably the cheapest out there, or one of them, and somebody spending $6 or $7 on a trade to buy $6 worth of stock.
Right. It makes
no
sense.
Fluctuating. And I'm thinking, now, you know, how are they doing this? And it's been going on so long that it's almost commonplace that such a low volume stock should fluctuate out to those digits, like, you know, say Ford Motor Company or IBM, somebody that's trading into millions, goes out less decimals than these guys.
Yeah, I agree. And it, you know, I mean, like I said, we're trying to, you know, keep the market as honest as we can from where we sit. But the regulators, you know, they took interest in the fact that, you know, certain things look improper. But we, you know, we have to focus on our business, and I think that's the main thing we can do to help investors is just, you know, really push the business development in all five markets, increase our revenues, and at some point it becomes difficult, if not impossible, to get in the way of a freight train, and we hope to be that freight train.
And the other question is, in your talks with Mercedes, have they ever brought up the point that, you know, in the near future they're going to be showing commercials, television commercials, where they're actually showing people this roof?
Well, they've done things, but most
one.
Of it, most of what they've been doing visually has been on the digital marketing side. So they have pretty amazing commercials. I mean, if you look at, for example, what they did with even the Silver Arrow yacht, it looks like a mini Bond movie. And, you know,
yes.
You go to our YouTube channel, you can see some of these things that Mercedes has done. In terms of, you know, an advertising buy on the Super Bowl, I mean, they own the stadium, so I guess they could do a lot more than most other companies. But, you know, we haven't had those discussions yet.
Okay. Well, thanks for your time, and let's hope we turn around by the end of the year.
Yeah, thanks. I think what I'd like to do now is maybe make a couple of closing remarks to, you know, maybe put some of these things together for people. And I don't believe there's any other questions in the queue. So, you know, first of all, let me say how much I appreciate everyone's patience. We covered a lot of ground today, and I think there was some new information that I'm sure our shareholders welcomed having. And when we look at all the markets for our technology, we can get a pretty clear indication of what we could expect as investors. Our biggest market, automotive, has rebounded. And now that the temporary effects we discussed in the last conference call are behind us, you know, we see a lot smoother sailing in that market. And our second biggest market, aircraft, the temporary lull that we had as they did the design upgrade is now behind us. And delivery of new aircraft with these improvements that were requested by the OEM have been started again. So this should also result in higher fee income from the aircraft market in the fourth quarter and beyond. And then, of course, you got new aircraft that are coming online using our technology and, you know, potentially a very significant aftermarket product coming out in the third quarter of 2017. We've also seen during the last quarter some pretty strong results in the train and mass transit market, and we expect these markets to also be good growth areas for us. And in the architectural market, you saw some pretty interesting projects begin to be announced by our licensees, such as the University of Edinburgh. And remember, this was a retrofit upgrade, which I think is significant. And then there's other architectural projects that are expected in the fourth quarter as well. And perhaps peeking ahead a little bit, there are some completely new products in the markets that are emerging as the world begins to better understand all the things that SPD Smart Glass can do. And in some of these cases, I think they're going to be very nice new uses that people hadn't thought about for our technology. And I know that me and Seth and Mike Lapointe, who I mentioned, you know, the three of us are really the primary business development team here at Research Frontiers, have all been harder than usual to reach for those people that contact us between these quarterly conference calls. And we've been traveling quite a bit across continents and often have had back-to-back business trips lately. I think the concept for the three of us of a time zone is something that we don't really understand anymore. We just go where we're needed. But I think you'll see the results of these efforts in the coming months, both with an expansion of our existing business and our technology's entry into new markets and new products. And our efforts to expand into these new markets and new products are certainly being amplified by our licensees who are also doing the same. And we have a great group of licensees that are quite motivated, and together we're working hard and devoting meaningful resources towards our combined success. And this year was one of accomplishments that will lead to, I believe, ever-increasing revenues and profitability. Our technology was experienced by 6 million people, more than 6 million people at the Milan World's Fair. That was great exposure. The world's leading premium automaker has put us in five different car models, including the best-selling luxury sedan in the world. We went from being an option on 29,000 cars 2 years ago to 42,000 cars last year to now being an option on over 120,000 cars within Mercedes. And this year, at least one other automotive OEM so far as selected SPD for serial production. So, you know, moving to the other markets, we've been selected for being used on both commercial and private aircraft, and we're the first and longest flying switchable window technology in the aircraft market. Standard equipment on 7 different aircraft models, and as I mentioned, now with the commercial market and an aftermarket product being introduced by Fokker in that area, you know, I think that there's some real potential there for explosive growth in the aftermarket. And we're being used on yachts, on cruise ships, trains, and other mass transit vehicles now, and we're even protecting some of the most precious artwork and historic documents in museums around the world. So the seeds of success have all been planted in all of our existing markets, and as I mentioned, new products and new markets are developing, and we're working hard to achieve that success. And for all of us at Research Frontiers, we appreciate the trust and investment by our shareholders that have made this possible. So I thank you all for this and for participating in today's conference call. And I encourage you all on Tuesday to please vote. It's your right, and you should exercise it. Thank you very much.
Conference is now concluded. Thank you for attending today's presentation. You may now disconnect.